You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Fans who were disappointed by Armistead Maupin's announcement some 20 years ago that he'd finished writing about Anna Madrigal, Michael Tolliver, and the other eccentric gay and straight characters who'd populated his wildly popular Tales of the City novels can take heart now, because the protagonist of his latest novel, Marianne in Autumn, is none other than Marianne Singleton, who was at the heart of the San Francisco-based series of stories Mr. Maupin began publishing in the 1970s. It's just out from HarperCollins, and I'm very pleased that it brings Armistead Maupin back to our show today. Hello.
Nice to be here, Leonard.
Some readers consider Michael Tolliver Lives, the novel you published in 2007, as being part of the Tales of the City series. But at the time you wrote it, didn't you claim it was something separate?
Yeah, I was trying to keep people from being too disappointed by the change in format. It was a first-person novel. And that's what I wanted it to be. I was trying to tell an intimate story about a gay man of a certain age who'd survived AIDS, and I wanted to focus on that. But I realized that I had just such a man in my repertoire, so I used Michael. And this time around, I really found myself getting hungry again for the old multi-character tapestry. And I remembered how much fun it was to build suspense by telling a story through four different viewpoints and having them dance around each other. So I went back for it.
What it allows you to do is introduce a character, and we have no idea what this character is all about, but in the end, it all connects.
Well, I have a tendency to do that. I think if I have a religion, it's that serendipitous thing. I think there are designs in our lives that we can see if we look closely enough, and I play with that idea a lot.
Were you happy to say goodbye to the series 20 years ago? Had it become something of a trap?
No, I was just ready. I was ready, and I had another story in mind because a friend of mine, I had a dear friend who named Tammy Dutrow, who was at the time the shortest woman in the world in the Guinness Book of World Records, and she went off and got a job playing E.T. in the movies. And I was fascinated by the notion of someone who had created this icon, this American icon, who herself was treated as an oddity when she walked down the street. And I thought there was a novel there, so I wrote one called Maybe the Moon.
Mm-hmm. Well, here you've returned to these characters, and your readers have said that they feel like they know Anna, Michael, and Marianne as well as they know their own friends and neighbors. Are they like real people to you as well?
Yes, they are. I mean, I partially because they're portions of my own personality, and I tap that when I'm writing about them. So there is the flame of life somewhere in them that has to do with me. Nowadays, I have a wonderful literary aid in the form of my dear friend Laura Linney, who played Mary Ann in the PBS miniseries all those years ago, and we've remained very close over the years. I saw her and her husband, my husband and her husband, got together last night after her show, Time Stands Still.
In which she's brilliant, by the way. She was here
brilliant
to talk about it.
Oh, great.
A couple of weeks back.
I was blown away. I was aching by the time that thing was over. I felt it so strongly. But Laura is now, in my head, Marianne. So when I'm writing the character, I could actually imagine how she would deliver a line and write it accordingly. And that's a tremendous aid, because in the past, I just heard my own voice.
Did that happen with all the characters? Because the actors who embodied them definitely brought some of their own personalities.
More so Laura than any of them. To a certain degree, Olympia Dukakis, I can still hear her voice. But I think because Laura and I in some ways are so one of the reasons we became friends after we met was she understood Marianne from the inside out. I put a lot of myself into Marianne. My friend Patrick Gale, the British novelist, was interviewing me on stage last week, and he said, I think Michael Tolliver is the person you wish you were, and Marianne is the person you're afraid you might be.
Yeah, well, old readers will remember she was something of what we might call a drama queen, right? She's a former TV talk show host who left her husband and daughter behind and moved to New York at the end of the sixth book.
That was right.
In the late 80s. This novel opens when she but Marianne, who's now 57 years old, returns to San Francisco to tell her old friend Michael some bad news.
Yeah, she's got a couple of pieces of bad news. And really knows that Michael, with whom she's kept in touch on the telephone.
Even though she kind of, when she left, she kind of betrayed him as well. He was going through a rough time.
He thought he was dying, as did pretty much anybody who was HIV positive in 1989, thought they had a really limited amount of time. She confesses to him, and Michael Tolliver lives, that one of the reasons that she left was that she was too burned by the loss of Michael's partner, John Fielding. She remembered the horror of that. And she couldn't bear the thought of going through it, so she basically left.
Weren't you one of the first novelists to write about a character dying from AIDS?
John Fielding was actually the first fictional AIDS death anywhere, because it appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle in 1983.
You are writing the books as a serial in the old-fashioned way, the way the Russian writers or Dickens used to write novels.
I had to react to the events of the moment, and here was this thing that came along. One of my closest, dearest friends died of pneumocystis pneumonia, related things of AIDS, basically, here at St. Vincent's Hospital in 1982, and I had to find a way to deal with that in the context of a basically comedic work, and that was a challenge, but I thought, well, I've dealt with everything else before, so it has to be part of the world.
And you're still doing that. Your characters in this book refer bitterly to California voters' decision to uphold Proposition 8.
Yes, well, that it's set at a time right after Obama's election when gay people, especially in California, had that, I describe it in the book as yes, we can, followed by no, you can't. This supreme disappointment that this thing had been taken away from us. My own husband, Christopher Turner, and I were married a month before Prop 8 went down, so we're among the 18,000 couples that are actually still legitimate.
Because you're grandfathered.
Yes. It's very interesting coming back from the British book tour into the States, into Miami, and having the customs official look us over because we're standing there together. And it doesn't help, I suppose, that there's a 28-year age difference between the two of us. And he says, so what's the relationship here? And I said, married. We're husbands. He said, really? He said, they haven't outlawed that yet? I said, not for us.
My guest is Armistead Maupin, whose latest novel is Marianne in Autumn. And it's subtitled A Tales of the City novel, which means that you obviously are thinking of bringing back the series, or at least making a one-shot here?
I don't know. I never do know from book to book, and I've learned not to commit. I'm not trustworthy in that regard.
Well, you committed enough to get married, but
I'm good around love. Literature is tougher.
Some of your readers have used the B word to describe Marianne. So did you ever worry about making her the protagonist of a novel?
A little bit, but I partially wanted to bring her back for some sort of redemption, to have her understood a little bit better. I was aware that it was all tumbling towards a complete change in – not a complete change, because some people say they saw from the beginning that she had a tendency to run when things got bad. She arrives in San Francisco at the age of 25, actually, just running away from her parents, and she flees her old friend's apartment when she gets there because she thinks she's kind of tacky. She's always had a tendency to not stick around, and – that is what I'm dealing with in Marianne in Autumn. What happens when there's – the only place you can run to is the place you've run away from.
Well, although she has mellowed somewhat in this novel, Marianne still seems pretty self-involved. She asks Michael and his young husband Ben to put her up while she recovers from surgery, even though she knows it'll put a strain on their relationship.
Well, she's conscious of it at least. She knows that it might not be a good thing, but I think she really feels that there's no place else to go, and she needs, as Michael puts it, she needs not to be alone. So they have this little garden cottage out in back where they can be separate from her, but she knows there's somebody there that can help her. And under the circumstances of what's bothering her, I think it's kind of understandable.
Well, that's part of Michael's personality. He can accept people despite their faults.
Yes, he can.
Your plot weaves together the stories of a host of eccentric characters. One of the most interesting is Shauna, Marianne's estranged daughter who's now in her mid-20s and earning a living as a sex blogger. Shauna becomes fascinated by a homeless woman she gives some money to on the street. And, of course, this is part of what you do. Later, that woman is going to become significant as well.
Well, yeah, I've always done that, and I really enjoy, those random weavings, as it were. I like Shauna, too, because she's a modern girl, and she's got a lot of the spirit of some of my earlier characters when they were young, and it's kind of fun for me to be reminded that the new generation has that as well.
Were you reminded in writing this just how much San Francisco has changed over the years?
You know, I usually tend to think of it as not changing very much.
Well, for example, the house that you wrote about nearly 40 years ago, you've turned that old rooming house into a single-family dwelling with a lock gate out front.
Well, certainly that real estate improvement thing is true of the world in general, isn't it? Traffic and gentrification are the story everywhere. In some ways, for that reason, San Francisco is more beautiful than it was 35 years ago. It's just harder to get into it and harder to stay there, especially for people of a younger generation. Shauna lives in the Mission District, which was for a while a bargain, but isn't anymore.
Well, I think most tourists, the biggest problem they have is the aggressive panhandlers in the center of town. It's more aggressive in San Francisco than pretty much any other place I've ever been.
I think that's true. Yeah, I think that's true. And I wanted to deal with that homeless population that we drive by and wonder, if we wonder at all, what's going on with them. And that was the reason for the inclusion of Leia, the homeless woman.
You also include things like Facebook, which wasn't around when you were writing the earlier novels.
Certainly wasn't. And I was learning to be on Facebook at the time I was writing Marianne in Autumn. So all of my fears and excitement and my growing addiction to it could be reflected in the novel itself. And the very thought that I had that Facebook could be a very creepy thing, you know, proclaiming a stranger a friend, was something that I could use in the novel.
Now, these books on one level strike me as being very, very much about San Francisco, a unique city. And to some degree about American culture and how it's changed over the years. And yet they've been translated into 15 languages, sold over 6 million copies worldwide. So obviously people are seeing something of themselves in it in other countries. When you go on tours, have you done a lot of book tours?
Well, I just got overseas? Back. I did 9 cities in the UK just last week. And I've got France and probably Germany coming up, Australia. And they all – it's really not just, I realize, just about San Francisco. It's about this new family structure, what I call the logical family as opposed to the biological family. Young people in cities for the past 30 years at least have been structuring assembling families for themselves out of whatever they've got around, you know, the people that care about them. In the case of Tales of the City, some of that grew out of the gay culture, the necessity for gay men and lesbians and transgendered people to form their own families because they're not welcome in their own. But that's certainly expanded in a larger sense to anyone who's in a city and makes a family of their friends. And that's true everywhere. When I go to Paris, people show up and say, "This is my Mrs. Madrigal, and this is my Michael, and this is my Muna." You know, they have a sense of how they fit into that scheme.
And some societies are actually allowing gay marriage. Others are talking, like in Uganda, about putting homosexuals to death.
It's a very odd time because there are places like Spain and Mexico which have accepted gay marriage where you wouldn't think that might be the case. Very deeply Catholic religious countries, but maybe because they have a stronger sense of family. They know actually what that means, and they will embrace their children in whatever form of love they need. But it is, it's an amazing time to be gay and in the world because it's both dangerous and exhilarating, and but a possibility that waits there for everybody.
Armisen Maupin's latest novel, The latest is also in the Tales of the City series is called Mary Ann in Autumn. It is published by Harper. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, Leonard. We'll be right back.